Hey, everybody. How's
Hey, Shane.
going, Jeff? Welcome.
Thank you. My hair is dry and I'm eating breakfast, so I may turn my camera off for a while.
You're welcome to do both, camera on or off. We're all family here. I'm disappointed you didn't dress up for me. That's my only disappointment.
I'll see you in a second.
You can see how Jeff is really dressed for the
I'm
occasion.
dressed for the nines. I'm ready to roll. Yeah. Just get a hat. These are my stay-at-home days, and I don't. I put a hat on because I didn't shower, and I'm just like, rolled out of bed, threw a t-shirt on, threw a hat on, I'm ready to roll.
That's how it should be. Well, you're, as
Like,
always, welcome here any way you want.
nice.
All right. Let's see here. We can just see if there's anyone else in the waiting room. So let's just jump in. We'll get started. Derek has just joined the program. Derek is a CEO of a tech startup in the Valley, primarily robotics, AI, things like that. And Jeff is a kind of a senior leader in a large HVAC company in on the East Coast. And Three Step Sports, I assume that is Michelle. So, but I'm not sure. I didn't know what the name of her company is. She's muted, it appears. All right. Well, we'll just jump in and everybody can join when they join. Looks like, I wonder if Michelle's having a hard time here. All right. So, looks like she dropped off to get back in. Jeff, let me start with you so that Derek can eat a little.
Good.
How you doing?
All right. I don't know. Things are plugging along. Main struggle is the same for me at this point would be, as an example, I spent probably 3.5, 4 hours yesterday working on an email, trying to influence people above me that the software package that they're considering, this might be the criteria that you might want to consider and stuff like that. And that put me behind the eight ball today. And I felt like, geez, if I hadn't spent 4.5 hours on that email yesterday, I would have been able to keep up with some of the stuff that I'm rushing on today to catch up.
Got it.
But, I don't know of any better way. And I feel like, they don't have the decision criteria down. So I put this extensive email together to try to, really give them nitty-gritty details on why the software that we're considering or that I really would like them to consider would really help operations a lot. It's industry specific. It is really the industry leader. It's not cheap, but it works really, really well. And
How long was that email?
how long? It was long.
4 hours to write. So, how long was the email long?
The first part of it, I highlighted in yellow and said, this is the only part that I really, would be, kind of reading information. The rest of it just details the rest of the software that you may or may not be interested in. So the first part of it was like two paragraphs.
Okay.
Everything
So that's
below the two
perfect.
paragraphs would only be if you really want to know the nitty gritty.
Okay.
Here's the nitty gritty. But other than that, this is why, how could we adopt this package more rapidly? What friction point do we have? And could we use it in a limited way just for the HVAC department and do some workarounds to get it rolled out faster? That's the first two paragraphs. The rest of it was just details on the software itself.
Okay. And how is the relationship with your supervisors? How is
I think
that?
it's good. I think it's really, I, yeah, I
Okay.
do. I think it's very, very good.
Okay.
The one person that reached back to me was the IT director, the person that's, acting the, she said, thank you for the great response, a lot of information. Three sentences that said she doesn't really know what to do with it, but she'll certainly consider it. Yeah.
So, just one thought I had is, depending on how important, how far-reaching this decision is, it may be better to do like a presentation in a meeting. And you may not have a forum to do that, but that's sometimes you're going to get a better hearing that way than in an email, largely because email is generally a better medium for memorializing conversations and agreements that already happened. It's generally a pretty ineffective medium for negotiating decisions, navigating differences, resolving conflict. Like, there are certain things that email just aren't that great at. And especially in the corporate world where people just have such limited amount of time and very full inboxes, you know, it becomes burdensome rather than efficient. And so again, there are definitely times where email is fine. You don't need to call a meeting for it. But if you're talking about something that has implications across more than one department and has to have CEO or higher sign off, you know, a 15 to 30 minute meeting is sometimes a better way to get those stakeholders on board. And, you know, you can do like a preview email that says, this is what I'd like to talk about. This is significant. This is why I think a meeting is important. That could be more effective for you potentially.
Yeah. Okay. It would probably still take 3 or 4 hours to put together a presentation, and that would, you know, you really have to think through those very detailed, concise points that you want to make.
Yeah.
Kind of what the email was trying to do for my own benefit was to say, okay, how would I actually try to articulate this in a way that really, and that's what I tried to hone the first two paragraphs on, but I guess that time could have been better spent if I'm going to invest 4 hours like that doing the presentation so that, you know.
It's hard to know. I'd have to know a bit more about your culture, but in general, I think the same amount of time investment could potentially yield. And it's early, you've sent an email, so it may be fine and people will work with it and make good decisions. But that would be the only hesitation I have, is that I think actually the same amount of time invested in a presentation would get you bigger results faster. Yep. So just something to think about as you're navigating, like, how do I influence up and make change? And again, being that you're really the expert and the thought leader in a domain that they really don't know about. And so they rely on you to teach them a lot. And so in a way, that's the other reason why I would say if you are working with superiors who have mastery in the same domain you had, then an email is an appropriate shorthand. It's just like, we already have a shared language. We already have a shared experience set. We already know industry best practices. So here's my recommendation. But for people who don't have any understanding of it, the other reason to do a presentation is that, you know, we've talked about this before. You really are an educator in the system that you're leading in, and you're educating up primarily. And so that's where, you know, just continuing to think about how can I educate this group on something that is pretty obvious to me, but wouldn't be obvious to them. So
I like it. Yeah. Good advice. Good. I think that's a good advice. You know,
how are your weekly meetings going? Are they improving at all? Or are they still pretty laborious?
They're going okay. Yesterday we were going to have one, and the two guys got called out. So I didn't, you know, continue with the rest of the meeting. The two managers that I normally work with were called out, funny enough, by the CEO of the company because he had a leak at his house. So they had to go fix the leak. I don't know why, you know, the managers got called out to do that, but whatever. Yeah, active leak. I think the CEO was out of town and he had a leak at his house, so they just went over there and tried to help.
That's funny. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, they were gone, but I had one-off meetings with the rest of the team to try to keep things moving. Again, maybe the only other thing, I talked to you just to tell you what I'm struggling with, trying to use my time more effectively. So, like you said, being an influencer and trying to educate them takes time.
It does.
There's a lot of other things flowing my way that I have to just keep trying to juggle all these different balls. And I don't think I'm going to be able to ever get really ahead of it because it does take quite a bit of time, no matter what, to keep influencing, you know, and educating.
I think that's true. I think that's a big part of your job that is not in your job description. And so another thought I had for you is, you know, my experience of you is that you're a person who will take on things kind of endlessly because you're just a doer. and you're capable. But I don't know, you may be doing this, but some active management up to help them guide you on prioritization can be really helpful. So little check-ins where you just go, I've got these 15 things, which things are the three most important, which order do you want them done in?
Right.
Can't do them all at the same time. Not all of them are going to get done. And see if that also helps you. I think that's the big thing that people who are high achievers and high performers, they don't often do is acknowledge their limits and ask for help managing their bandwidth.
Yep. I was down to shop last night till, 8 o'clock, 8:30, still trying to finish up. I got down here at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's because of that email, because I had some other things, so it's long days. And like you said, sometimes I'm definitely intended to just want to plow through it.
Yeah.
And get everything done, so yeah, I'll have to work on that a little bit more too.
So, I want you to read up on and watch the module about the Enneagram. And particularly, I want you to watch the Enneagram 3 and see how that resonates for you. And then just, you can search the web if you want, but just start reading up on the Enneagram 3, because my sense is that's probably where you live. We haven't done the assessment, but that's probably where you live. You'll find resonance with it, I think. And in it, one of the things that happens to threes is they get caught in what I call performance momentum, which is all of life becomes reduced to a series of tasks that just have to get done. And they just kind of lose themselves. And I'm a three too, by the way, so I know this directly, but we tend to kind of lose ourselves in a long list of tasks that just have to get done. And it's not uncommon for a three who's shaped by that to kind of forget to eat lunch, forget to do the things that they,
That's me all the way.
Just lose balance. And the reason is because threes live in a state that is suspended from their own heart. Mm-hmm. They tend to be suspicious of or find feelings and emotions really inefficient. And so when you are suspended, you're able to just kind of get things done independent of what might be going on in you. And it's important for threes to occasionally slow down and just check in with themselves to figure out, what am I actually feeling and what are my limits? Because what will happen is you become less effective, not more. And you lose strategic thinking also, because it becomes this very tactical, just getting stuff done. So pausing and giving yourself some margin to reflect and connect will help you guide your day a little differently. And honestly, one of the best things you can do is to get outside, to go out, look at the sky, honestly, lay down in the grass, feel the gravity of the earth kind of pulling on you. I know those sound weird, but I'm telling you, these things have a way of resetting and interrupting our momentum. And when that happens, what it provides you is it's like a mini strategic retreat for your body and your mind, where you'll naturally begin to calibrate again to, like, you don't have to think about it even. It'll just happen. Like, you take a break, you step back, you go outside, you look at the sky, you do whatever you can just to take a break, and take a few deep breaths. And then you'll begin to find yourself back at, like, okay, what do I really need to do? What's most important? That is a one way to help you with time management, is to understand that there are a lot of things you don't actually have to do on that day. You just get into a spot about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I do feel like I used to live in city, and I used to go for walks, even 10, 15 minute walks. Now I live in the suburbs. There's really not a lot of place to walk to other than just a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
When I did live in city and I went for walks, it would just, that 10 or 15 minute walk would just felt different. Or if I went down to a coffee shop and just had a cup of coffee and grabbed a bagel and walked with it and ate, it broke up the day. I don't do any of that anymore. I feel like I'm still deep in COVID, the way I'm living. I'm tunneled in at my desk, or when I go into work, I don't really have any time for myself to do anything.
So when you're working from home, you have a backyard with grass?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go into your backyard and lay down. I'm not kidding. Try it set a timer for 5 minutes, lay down and look up at the sky. And I want you to feel the way in which the gravitational force of the earth is pulling away the stress in your body. And I want you to look at the sky, and I want you to begin to just contemplate its vastness. Those two. That's it. 5 minutes. Do that. Get up and head back in and work.
Okay. And
just okay. Tell me, do it next time between now and the next call, and tell me what you experienced.
Okay.
And it's okay if you're like, I was bored, I was anxious, I didn't want to do this, I didn't see the point. It's fine too. Just tell me whatever comes up for you. Just tell me that.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we'll come back to you in a bit if we need to. Derek, I'm going to hop over to you. I see your camera on. You don't seem to be eating as much. So,
finished my small breakfast. I think I may be an Enneagram 3, although I've never done it. I should obviously go through it. But everything you guys just said resonated. I have a very long list of tasks. I don't feel like I ever really get into a good flow state with it. I kind of, because they have varying levels of complexity and timelines. So I feel like I'm just fucking, chopping on things there. And then, I've got my project over there that I've been chopping on for, weeks and supposed to already be done. And then I've got some short-term fire that comes up and interrupts things. But yeah, everything you just said resonated. Definitely with the emotions thing. I mean, I have a separate from this of a therapist, and I just realized I'm very good at just totally ignoring how I feel. That's a totally different channel. Is that saying that? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. And what's the point of it anyway? Like, yeah, I hear it, but I don't want to that's bad music. I don't want to listen to that music.
Yeah, exactly. So I think actually maybe the thing I would jump in with me is there's a set of conversations. Just a little bit of background refresher. I've got seven people, one of my co-founders, so he doesn't really report to me. He's more just like, I don't know, my totem that's off in the corner and keeps track of all the same crap I have to listen to. And then occasionally I can ping him, but he's our CTO. So he's just really in the weeds in the technology. So one thing about me is I avoid negative feedback. It's pretty easy for me to encourage people. But I am very negative. So, and on that thing where you're ignoring emotions, like I'm actually hypercritical. Most of it gets directed at myself. And then I have a bit of a hard time, for a lot of reasons, obviously you don't want to hurt people's feelings. It's not always just that. There's other things like since the beginning. And one of the things that happens as you build up a company is you people come and go and you have these different moments where you're like, oh crap, someone's leaving. It all feels very tentative. If you get into that mode, and I think I've been in that mode for years, it's like you're worried you're going to push people away or diminish performance or whatever. So,
okay.
But at the same time, I've got a very good instinct for, I feel like anytime someone's leaving, I know like a month and a half, 2 months before they leave. And I'm the guy who's like, hey, I just got a feeling so-and-so's going to leave. They'll be like, what? And then later they leave. So things like that I see, but I feel like I don't act on enough. Anyway, one of the things I've been seeing for a while is I've got an engineering manager, VP of engineering, who he's a great guy. He's very professional. He didn't quite have enough of a robotics background coming in. So he leveraged everything that we had in terms of, hey, this is how we organized our teams. This is who we have kind of leading things. In retrospect, I wish I'd gotten more of an expert who just knew robotics and didn't know people. He kind of knows people and process and not robotics as much. He had a very, very technical product. They built a hardware product. They built like Wi-Fi routers at his previous company. So he came in and basically just started leaning on all the people we had in place, which I saw as like kind of temporary things that where we were trying to pull in better people. And then flash forward, 2 years is two of these people is very, very process oriented when we're still unfortunately in a stage where we need I don't necessarily think we have all the right process. And they're like, one of the guys is our QE guy. We just want him testing robots like crazy, running them. He's just always thinking about building a bigger team and process. And another guy is our engineering manager, is kind of always leaning on the way that our architecture works. And so both these guys he loves our VP of engineering loves. He's like, these are my key guys. And actually my CTO and I, my CTO hates, he doesn't hate them, but he's like, these guys are terrible. Like, you know, it's like, what is Kevin thinking? So I'm stuck in the middle where I'm like, on the one hand, I kind of understand why he's doing it. Like, it's great. You need people who know process. And, you know, our QE guy who really doesn't, he wants another job. He wants to be like a VP of engineering one day. He doesn't want to just run his team right now. He's got grand aspirations. The one thing that gives him is he tries to build a big team, and he's really good about that. He's the best hiring guy in our company. But when it comes to his actual job, we're constantly having to poke and prod him to get him to do it. So that's fine. We kind of give that feedback as we go, but then we come around to like comp, and every time, because Kevin, our VP of engineering, leans on these guys, he wants to pay them more than anyone in the company. And we're just like, what my CTO says is like, I pay people so I don't have to worry. Both these guys have to worry about their job through him, through this manager. Like, I have to worry down all the way to their level and like hyper, you know, scrutinize what they're doing. So anyway, like we already had one round where he proposed comp. I came back, I came up with proposals. He modified, I modified, basically those two guys back down. And then he's like, he waits a week and he's like, yeah, this all looks good. But, and then he like asked to increase them back up. And I'm like, so now I'm basically just avoiding this conversation for now 2 weeks, because we've got plenty of other fires and I've got to get back to it. But anyway, I'm rambling at this point, but I think, and that none of these are even like my top, it's not on my top three list. It's just like sitting there bugging me. I need to get a plan together for it. I think it's probably just, I sit down and have a conversation with him, to say that I, you know, more like a check-in. It's like, we're still not synced up. I've seen good progress, but like, we're not where we need to be. It's just, I have to beg for change. It's like, I have this buffer in between, and I think everything's getting attenuated. Like, or maybe the VP of engineering doesn't share we're not exactly aligned. So we say X, Y, and Z. He drops Y and Z, I think, and then turns around and says, maybe you should X. And then it's just not happening fast enough. So I don't know what it is.
Okay, a couple of things. So one of the things that research has shown time and again is that when you rank order in employees' mind, really good bosses to really bad bosses, the bosses that rank at the lowest consistently and repeatedly are really nice bosses. Bosses who are really thoughtful and kind and considerate rank at the bottom. Bosses who are assholes rank above nice bosses. And then the highest ranking bosses are those that are direct but respectful. Right. And the reason that nice bosses rank so low consistently and repeatedly is people are always feeling like they're guessing. They don't really know where they stand. And one of the things that organizations thrive on is clarity. Clarity is one of the most important things you can give to people that you work with and that you lead. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not saying I know that you're a nice boss. I don't know that. You just indicated you're like, I hate giving critical feedback because I don't want to demotivate and all that. And there is very real ways that you should and shouldn't give feedback. So that's good instinct for you to pay attention to that. But the most important thing is you don't hide how you feel, because people want to know where you really stand. And so, you know, I don't know what the conversation has been like to date with this guy. And I know you don't want to spend a lot of time on that on this call, which is fine. I'll just give you a few things and we can move to the kind of your top three. But I have two associations as I hear you. And one is to go to that VP and let them know, hey, I want to be really clear about our perspective on those two employees. If I haven't been very clear, I want you to know that we believe they're underperforming and they're not delivering what we have come to expect. It's entirely possible that we have benchmarked talent differently and I've experienced different kinds of talent than you have. And this is what I expect of somebody in that role. And that's my experience. Now, if you don't have that experience or you don't know that, then you want to get curious about who would have the proper kind of expertise to be able to benchmark whether they're performing at their best or not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not uncommon for people in senior roles to think they always know what should be. But if you don't have experience running a team like that, you may or may not be accurate in your assessment of what they should be able to achieve. And again, I don't know because I haven't had a chance to talk to and really hear it, but I just want you to kind of, I want to put those thoughts in your mind. One is make sure you're really clear and direct. And two is make sure that you're coming with the truth as you see it and acknowledge either your experience level or the CTO's experience level to say, here's what we believe. So, I mean, I'll pause there for just a minute and just let you interact with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that resonates. I've gotten feedback before, mostly from my girlfriend, that I'm nice and not kind.
You're not what?
Nice and not kind, right? So meaning you tell, you know, the fear is not actually saying what you want. You're just trying to make it be happy. But that only goes so far. Like, it's like there's a level of politeness and then, yeah, of course I'm very good in emergencies. Let's just put it that way. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the guy you want in an emergency. No hesitation. Because I always know what I want to have happen.
What does it mean when she says you're nice but not kind?
Generally, that I'm holding back on. Yes, I'm not being clear about my emotions. And I'm maybe listening more than I want to. I'm not saying what I want to say, and that I'm trying to attenuate negative feedback.
Yeah, got it. Okay. So there's a ton of stuff we could dig in on that, but for a moment, I'll just say a few things. One is start to get curious about, and you may already know the answer, but start to get curious about why that is. So I'll give you two options for now. And there are more than two, but I'll just give you two and you can see if you lean to one or the other. One is I just don't have the energy, life. It demands enough of me as it is. And I just don't have the energy or the interest to muster what it takes to try to have that conversation. I'd rather just kind of be in my own world. That's one option. Another option is, boy, I just don't like conflict. I hate conflict. I don't like it when people are at odds, and I'm a harmonizer. I like things to be harmonized because I like my life to be peaceful and I don't want to have that disruption. And then a third might be I'm worried what they will think of me. I'm concerned about how I come off. I'm concerned about what they will think about me, how they will talk about me to others. I'm concerned about hurting feelings. And so those are the things. So those are three potential reasons that people aren't truthful and direct and honest. Do any of those resonate for you?
Maybe the middle one, but not one. I'm definitely not worried about what people think about me. I mostly want the outcome. And I think both in my personal relationships and at work, there's this kind of idea that you can't unsay something. And especially when you're in a complex situation, it's basically, for me, I think it's two things. One, you can't unsay something. And the other is, you don't know what you don't know. And I find I've had a lot of like positive results of just waiting, holding things and waiting until I know they're cooked, because I have a lot of ideas. That's a piece of feedback I get a lot. It's like, I need to become more succinct and really like boil it into bullet points. And so, you know, between not being able to unsay things, not being potentially succinct, and then knowing that I don't know everything. So this VP of engineering, he's got like literally 25 years on me. So the only thing I have on him is I was the first guy here, and now there's 50 people. So I've had the benefit of seeing people come in and kind of spin around and do weird stuff. He's like very linear thinker. And he's like, we got to get ready for when everything's scaled. And I'm like, we're not even there yet. So I don't even worry about that. We've got to get shit working today. And so I'm most of the time, the feedback I'm giving him is, let's blow everything up. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. So that's the kind of general vein of things.
Okay. So if what you're telling me is he's got 25 years of experience running and managing the thing that you hired him to run and manage, and you don't have 25 years of experience running and managing this kind of stuff, then I would be really, really careful about deciding what proper benchmarking is. Here's the deal with CEOs in general. Very often CEOs are empowered to make decisions they do not have the authority or credibility to make. And a really good leaders are the leaders that understand I am not qualified to make decisions about X. And so I either need to find an external consultant or mentor or guide who is qualified and can help me vet this, or I need to trust that my team who I have hired, I will empower them to make those choices. And that's really good leadership. So, you know, it's a classic thing. There was a CEO that was hired at a major retail company, and they came into a manufacturing company that they used to retail the things this other company manufactured. And this retail CEO came in and just began making all kinds of decisions because he had 30 years of experience as a CEO, and everybody was going, what the hell are you doing? And they had to have a coach, and we came in and we said, look, you're not qualified to make most of the decisions you're making. You've never run a manufacturing company. You don't know the first thing about manufacturing. You know a lot about retail. So that was the advice we had to figure out. You're either going to trust the team, because he was like, no, we should be able to do that easily. And they're just like, you have no clue what you're talking about. That is not even remotely in industry standards. And so it is good for you to just ask yourself the question, am I truly qualified? And if I'm not, and I don't trust this guy, who would I trust who is qualified that I can talk to and get proper benchmarking?
Yeah. I mean, so this tells me, well, one, I don't feel as bad for holding back on the feedback, because sometimes that holding back is just the feeling that you have. And
so let me just interrupt for a second. This is important. It is totally okay for you to give feedback, especially with a preamble that says, hey, I need you to know, if I were in your shoes, I'd want to know where I'm sitting, what I'm thinking about. So I can help you figure out how to navigate this with me. But this is where I am right now. Now, I could be inexperienced and ill-informed, and I'm willing to have that conversation. But I want you to know that this is my starting point.
Yeah.
And so I am feeling this, and I'm open to being convinced otherwise, but this is how I'm feeling. That's really valuable. And so when you give them, and you do want to be succinct, by the way, I agree with that. Like, really succinct is helpful. So this is how I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking. I could be wrong about that. I'm open to a conversation. Yeah. If I'm in your shoes, I want to know that this is what I'm thinking and feeling. But I understand I may not have the experience level that you have. And then you might say, as part of that, you go, and I have to tell you that there's probably a vantage point I have you don't have. So that it has nothing to do with experience level. It has to do with where I am on the mountain and how far I can see. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to have a different perspective. And in some cases, that perspective is going to be different than the one you have. And so that's a great way to have that conversation.
Hmm. That helps. I think one of the things, there's not many people inside the company. There's maybe one or two other people I can. Well, there's one other person who has slightly more experience than me in this industry, and she actually is generally supportive of both the people that he's supportive of. So maybe I make this like a three-way conversation, especially since they're both kind of leaning one way and I'm the other. So it'll maybe provide some balance to the.
You've also got an issue with your CTO.
Yeah.
If your CTO continues to be kind of jaundiced towards these players, and is frustrated, he's got to be involved in a conversation about that.
Yeah.
The VP needs to know that the CTO is whispering in your ear.
Yeah.
And is frustrated.
I have been planning. So I was either going to go around to one-on-one to them and then have a four-way meeting or just get them all in the room. So I should probably just kill two birds.
Actually, I'm not convinced you need to do it all at once. I think it is okay for you to try to help. What you're going to do is you're going to coach them in each of those one-on-one conversations. And you're going to help them be successful and effective when they come in. And here's why. Because you're the CEO, it is possible that the power dynamic will prevent them from being really, truly open. And the larger the meeting gets, the less open people become. Uh-huh. And so it is valuable for you to go to them and say, hey, I want to have a meeting. I want you in that meeting. Here's why I want you in that meeting. And here's what I need from you in that meeting. I need your clear perspective, because I don't want to triangulate anymore. I want us to come together and have an honest conversation about what's happening, and then let's hold hands and go forward and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And so I think it is worthwhile. I don't know that you have to do it with everybody, but you might say, like, if you've already had a couple of conversations with the VP, you may not need to do another one. You might just be able to say, I need the CTO involved. I need this other person involved. And then you would tell the VP prior to the meeting, hey, I'm inviting them in because I think I don't have the level of expertise and experience to properly benchmark talent. And I think these two are having an experience that we're at odds. My only interest is I just want to get this thing run to ground so that we can move on. I think that'll help you have a more effective conversation.
Cool. Yeah, that's helpful. Cool. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to just jump back to Jeff quickly. Jeff, anything you want to pop in on? Anything else that's your opinion?
No, I thought it was, by the way, I grabbed my lunch while you guys were. That was good. Very good conversation. It was right there in the thick of it, struggling, you know, alongside trying to figure out how would I handle this. Shane, you always give very good direct advice, which I love, you know, you dive right in. So yeah, it's always a struggle too, to figure out, even from my, you know, as I'm listening, how to manage some of the people in my group where I might have a difference. I would go about things differently, and I'm waiting to see what the outcome is going to be. I think in my case though, I have a better benchmark of what I'm looking for.
Yeah. You know, you have expertise in the group you're managing. You have a lot of expertise, and that's different.
So it's different in that respect, you know? So, but I really, I really appreciate what you said. The best part was letting people know, hey, here's where I'm coming from. I'm open to hearing and being convinced otherwise. I think I need to have some of those conversations with one of my managers who I think I'm not 100% sure how well he's performing. I keep having these thoughts in my head as I'm talking to him. I could do this myself in 5 minutes and not have to follow up with it. You know what I mean?
So I would tell you, like, depending on that, I would say you could have a version of that conversation with him.
Yeah.
That just says, hey, I got to tell you, I'm struggling right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm right, but I'll tell you that based on my experience, every time I see this, I feel like it's just easier if I do it myself. Mm. And I need your help to understand how I can see this a little differently, or either you got to show up differently.
Yeah.
But coming at him with that. And it's okay for you to also come with your experience and say, hey, I've got 25, 30, whatever it is, years of experience doing this. It doesn't mean I'm right, but it does mean that I have, you know, there are a lot of things I know that I don't know, and I do know what I do know. And
this is
something I do know. And it could be that he really wants to be coached or mentored. You know, have you given the 5 leadership languages quiz to your team?
No.
Okay. Highly recommend that. The 5 leadership languages quiz helps you map what matters to the people that you lead. It helps you understand what builds your credibility, what drains your credibility, and what motivates them. And I developed this after doing probably more than 100 CEO 360s, in which I began to detect patterns that were repeating over and over again across contexts. And there were certain patterns that were universal, like everybody in an organization wants clarity. Everybody in an organization wants respect. Nobody's ever come to me and gone, I don't really care about respect. I'm fine if people don't respect me. You know, that never happens, right?
Right.
Those are universal leadership languages. You must always provide clarity and respect if you want people to feel you're credible and they are motivated. The second thing that I noticed was there were certain things that mattered a lot to some people and didn't matter at all to others. And I was like, that's fascinating. Like, this one person is super upset. The CEO is never in the office. And the other person is like, yeah, it's great. It's fine. I'm sure he's doing a great job. And you're like, what? For one, they're ready to leave the company over it. The other one, they're like, it's the reason I'm here. And that's when I started to realize there are patterns. And I detected effectively 5 polarities, kind of like Myers-Briggs. There are 5 polarities, which is an example would be recognition and feedback. Some people in an organization experience recognition like fuel in the tank. But if you're not recognizing them, they genuinely feel like you don't care and they're unmotivated. Other people view recognition as like, fine, like if you want to give it, it's fine, but I don't really care. Like, it's kind of a waste of my time, actually. Like, I'd rather you tell me how I could improve rather than what I did well. Like, I did well, great. Yeah, I did well, fine. And so imagine if you were to treat somebody who values feedback, giving them tons of recognition, there's like, oh my gosh, what? Do you see anything? And then if you imagine if you just kept giving feedback to the person who wants recognition, they're just like, I don't want any part of this. And that's just one of the polarities, right? So there are 5 of them. And so that quiz takes 5 minutes. It's free. You go to my website, send it to them, ask them to share their results with you. And in that results, I talk about exactly how to have a conversation with them.
So I have a question on that. I'm looking at myself. If somebody gives me recognition, I like it, but I only like it to the degree that it's for the right thing. So my boss will throw out these little emails. Hey, team, great for hitting 500K or, you know, whatever it is. He sent an email saying something like, my email must have worked with you guys. You brought another 500K in the last 10 days or whatever. And it didn't even register with me. I was like, did he ever talk? He had a conversation with me about that? I don't even remember it.
Yeah, yeah.
But would I want him to really know if he recognized my plan that I put three hours into and said, I'm behind it? Now I know I got like a green light to go. So I'm lined up on the race side, ready to go, go, go. And if he even recognizes a piece of it, I'm like, oh, that feels really good because then I've got a chance at moving forward. And, you know, so recognizing the right thing.
No, actually what you're describing in the five leadership languages nomenclature, you are talking about empowerment and mentoring polarity. Mm-hmm. So when people tend to be younger and earlier in their career, they value being mentored. You want to find somebody who will invest time, energy, and effort into developing them. When you become and develop mastery and you're an expert and you know that you know more than your boss, what you crave is empowerment. Mm-hmm. You're like, just give me the ball. Let me run with it. I know what I'm doing. And right. So leaders that don't give you the ball for you will demotivate you and they will lose credibility in your eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by what the five leadership languages was designed to do is map the minefield, because everything I'm talking about is invisible and hidden. and one wrong step, you set off landmines. So what I did is instead of doing, you know, 360s, which are undoubtedly the most effective way to help a CEO improve. For those that can't afford that and don't want to take that on, this is a shortcut intended to give them like quick access to possible areas where you could be viewed as a problem by your team. And your team will never tell you that. You know, no one's going to walk up to you and be like, I really want you to recognize me. They'll never say that, you know,
right.
But they want it and they care about it. And when you know that, you can navigate more effectively and efficiently your team. So for example, this guy who you're saying, I can do this in 5 minutes. If his language is recognition, how you have that conversation is totally different than if his language is feedback. So that's why it's useful to know kind of to map out your team, to write down. Like I have people who literally will put it on like their wall if they're managing a team and they just remind them like, here's Joe, what is his top three leadership languages? And or top two or whatever. And then you just know, like I'm talking to Joe, that's important to him. I need to just be mindful of it.
Right. Okay. I like that. I think that'll work, you know, fairly good getting everybody. They'll do that and they'll enjoy it. I think, you know, they're open to all that stuff. And I think the guy that I'm talking about the most, he wants to be empowered. So maybe I'm not managing him the right way. I don't really know yet. He is a great guy. He's not a young guy. He's been in business for himself, in the HVAC business. So he's run a company for several years of his own, had employees, stuff like that. And so that's why for me, I feel like, geez, why isn't he grabbing the ball and running with this a little bit more? He kind of knows better.
So here's how I would say to do this. So first of all, have him take the quiz. Read the results, make sure he sends them to you. And let's say his leadership language is empowerment. And honestly, what we should do is you should have them take the quiz and then come back and review it with me,
yep.
The results, and I will tell you how to do this. But I'm just going to give you a quick example of how to go. You would basically say, okay, here's a guy who really wants empowerment. And you're looking at him going, you know, empowerment is about trust, like mm-hmm. handing you the ball and saying, I know you can do this better than I can, go. That's what empowerment is. Mentoring is, you're not ready. I'm going to keep coaching you and helping you get better.
Right.
And the way you do that with somebody who wants empowerment, you just go, hey, it seems really important to you that you have the power to do what it is you want to do. And I want to get there with you. But there are a few blocks between here and there.
Right.
One of them is when I hand you tasks to do, I notice that they don't get done at the level that I expect them to get done. Mm-hmm. And so we need to cure that first. And once I see consistently that has changed, you're going to get more empowerment. I want to work to give you that thing. So what you do is you treat the five leadership languages as currency. As
yep.
like, you want this thing. I want to give you that thing. Here are some things I need in order to give you that thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's fair enough. Yeah, I think that would work really well.
Good. So have them take the quiz, and then when you come back next week, tell me what's up.
I'm going to have three people do it.
Great.
The three people that are closest to, you know, that I work with the most to get things done. And I'm going to have all three of them do it, and then we can talk it through just so.
And you do it too, so that you can talk to them about who you are.
Yeah, I did the five languages.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your highest score? Do you remember?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So go back.
I'll bring it in. I'll let you know.
yeah. So okay. Just fine. I bet I have the results for you. I can find them, I'm sure. Just in my CMR, CRM.
I probably took it as info@jeffchartier.com, the email.
Okay. Yeah. I'll check to see if I can find it. But
yeah. Okay. I can probably find it too and send it to you so we can have a full conversation about it. But I think that would be good. You know, that'll give you the next step.
I think that would. Okay, let's go back to Derek here for a few minutes.
I was just looking mine up.
Did you take it?
Yeah, I did. I didn't score super highly in any one direction, but the top ones were purpose and purpose, feedback, and empowerment.
Are the three that matter to you.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, given your role.
Hmm.
So, you know, you're probably a kind of person who's a little bit more motivated by higher purpose than just doing a job well. You undoubtedly care about improving yourself and optimizing. And often CEOs don't need lots of pats on the back. They're not thrive on that.
Yeah.
And they'd rather just be like, I just want to get better.
That was I don't think to do that with other people. I definitely don't do it with myself.
Yeah. And that's why it's important for you to maybe have a few people take this quiz also and just ask the results so that you can understand, like, if you got someone who values recognition, you got to work on that on your end. Like, you got to figure out how to be like, oh, I got to care about that. I don't think about that. And then empowerment makes a lot of sense because you're a CEO.
The VP of engineering that I was talking about talking to earlier, he's basically explicitly asked for it before. He's like, he's a really good guy. He's like, you're really good and point stuff out. He's like, if I'm ever doing anything right, don't be afraid to let me know.
There you go. That's a great indicator of someone who is going to value recognition.
Yeah.
And so the conversations with him need to be interlaced with genuine affirmation and encouragement and appreciation. Absolutely genuine. It can't be fake, but you got to find those things and you got to lace conversations with that so that he can really hear you.
Yeah.
And you link it to, like, I think you're amazing and here's what would be even more amazing. Instead of you're failing, it's you're already doing really great and I really need you and I'm relying on you. And here's what would take that to a whole new level. That's another way to frame the same conversation, which for you wouldn't be as useful. You know, if I were to give you feedback, you'd rather me just say, hey, let's find a way to get you more efficient in your words. You're like, got it. I talk too much. Next, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Trying to think, what else do I have?
You had alluded to it doesn't make your top three. I'm not sure you have a list of three things, but are there bigger fish you're trying to fry that you'd like to interact on?
Yeah. I mean, my top three are, I've got a big deadline end of September that the whole company is working toward. And that's great because kind of in lieu of a gigantic customer commitment, you always need something that's kind of a galvanizing force. And so we've got an expo where we're going to be showing a new product, kind of everyone's geared around that. So that's great. I find you get kind of maximum output from people when you've got something big like that where everyone's got to be working on it. Behind that, I need to be working out our roadmap. This is one where it just needs there's a lot of interdependent pieces and you just need to do a first draft. Like I've got to do it. And then I actually watched one of your videos and I'm kind of like building consensus. I'm about to go through that process now. I'm just a little too slow with it, but I'm kind of starting it where I'm going to basically like paint a vision for our new office. What we're going to, where are we going to install robots? What are they going to do? What does that mean for development? And so that's the top of my list. And I've just been hacking my way through it. I think I'm probably overdoing it. probably at the point where I just need feedback on it. And people are like literally begging for it at this point. So I think
this is, help me understand what this is. This is your vision for a new physical space for the company. Is that right?
Yes. And that will involve essentially physically building a couple of, not new products, but new applications of our current product. And so it's like a showroom, and it will be another way to kind of galvanize efforts. It'll be a 1 to 2 month process to get all the pieces in, polish it up. And I want to use that where that involves like a lot of extra resources that we don't have. We'll have more space, more robots. It's going to be a big time when we can potentially affect some change in the way we organize our development teams. Like right now, they kind of have to multiplex across robots because we don't have enough resources for them. And we could, for instance, move to smaller teams, like a larger number of smaller teams, because we'll literally be able to give them their own resources. So there's some organizational shifts that can happen. There's some product shifts, and they're kind of all tied through. The rubber meets the road at like, where's the robot? What's it doing? And I'm kind of laying a bunch of that out and then prioritizing the order in which we do these things. And then I'm going to run it through my head of product and our operations person, engineering person, VP of engineering, and then get feedback on it.
Okay.
It's a bit of a longer term roadmap. It's a medium term roadmap. We're tying it to customer, basically customer opportunities. So, you know, it's like everyone wants a bit of someone else's thing. So it's like the product team, if I give it to them, they can execute on it, but they're going to want to know, hey, what's the hiring and kind of like, purchasing stuff that needs to happen to make this happen. And also, is this simpatico with what the sales team is looking at? And then I'm going to go to the sales team and be like, you know, if we build this, is this going to help you sell to X, Y, and Z? And then the engineering team's going to want kind of all of the above. So that's what I'm working on now. That's top of my list. And then second on my list is just managing everyone across this deliverable at the end of the month, where I tend to have in my style, but this goes back to this not being direct thing. And then also in our organization, we're very cross-functional. Sorry. Let me walk that back. We're very functional. We have all these functional groups, and we like to stand up a robot. We have a vision team, a control team, a hardware team. They all have to work on the same thing, as opposed to having a pod of people that are just where it's a cross-functional team. Same thing trying to deliver content. It's like, I can't just have the marketing team do it because there's really specific product details that they don't know. And they also, the sales team cares. And so I can't centralize. I have a hard time centralizing ownership of things. Mm-hmm. And that can be difficult for me. It's like, yeah, I wish I was just most of the time in kind of my leadership team meetings, I wish I was just a lot more of an asshole where I could be like, so-and-so do it. And they'd be like, yeah, but I don't have that. I'd be like, take care of it. Don't care. It's like, figure it out with the people in this meeting that you need to talk to. Let me know when it's done.
There is a way to do that, that will help you get guidance on organizational structure. And it is simply, I need you to take this on. Can you take that on for me? And then you ask the question, what do you need in order to get that done? That question forces them to go, what do I need? And they might say, well, I need like sales. They never talk to me. And then you ask, okay, that's fair. What do you need in order to get sales on board? Like, I don't need anything. I just need to talk to them. Or they go, I need you to tell them that I'm empowered to do this and that they need to listen to me on this issue. Great. I can do that. Or I can't do that. I don't have time. Maybe we need to figure another way through this. But that question, just get good at asking at certain moments after you've said, I need you to do this, what do you need in order to achieve to do that? Is there anything you need in order to do that? That is a powerful question. It's also a powerful question where you're getting tons of resistance. Mm-hmm. Like if you're just getting people going, not this, not that, that, you go, what do you need in this conversation? Mm-hmm. That is a super clarifying thing. And they're like, what do I need? I need you to hear that this is not an easy lift. Mm-hmm. Okay. I hear this is not an easy lift. Now that I understand that, what else do you need? Mm-hmm. I need you to add staff. Okay. Where would you like that staff to come from? Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's sort of like keeping people super honed in. So that's a wonderful question to get good at asking. Equally important, what you're about to embark on with regard to space and changing space. Have you watched all of Module 1 yet?
No.
Module 1 has a lot of important stuff in there for you, including...
Why and...
Yeah, the why stuff you probably already worked on. I'm not saying you need to... You guys have a higher purpose and vision and values and all that fun stuff, I assume.
Yep.
So... what that module will do, you don't have to watch necessarily the whys, although there are some things in how a why gets built that is useful for you to understand, because it's actually the same as how you get enrollment and buy-in for many big initiatives. Mm-hmm. And that is, there is a, what I would call a controlled collaboration. You know, so it's not just sort of like, what do you all think? And we're all kind of come together and do this. It's a lot more focused than that, but it allows them to weigh in and create a sense of ownership. And so there's a specific way things are done that, even if the content isn't what you're after, I want you to listen to through the lens of how might this apply if I were trying to build a change initiative. And just know that, like, all the way to the very last video, which is kind of the staging the ascent video, which I assume you've seen or at least heard of or something,
yep.
That is kind of at the heart of change management. And all of that module one can be really helpful and understanding how to lead and guide change management. And that's what you're doing right now. And here's what change management is. Change management is pain management. Even good change is painful. Mm-hmm. Nobody who shows up and is like, I really hope that my desk is moved today and I have to figure out where my stuff is. You know, like that's a change that is material, and nobody likes being told they're now reporting to somebody else and they're no longer working with this person they loved working with. And that's hard on people. So that's why I designed that first module, to help leaders understand, like, when you're looking for buy-in and how to change and get that rapidly, this is the emotional process that you've got to take people through in order to get large scale change to happen. I don't mean small things, but a variation of it happens at a small scale when you're doing little changes also.
Yeah. No, this sounds, I mean, this is going to be a pretty big change. And I think
it's going to be a huge change. If you're changing physical space, it's a very big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like you're also changing org design. That's a huge deal. Org design, just so you know, I need you to understand this about org design. It is literally like you fire people from their current job and you rehire them to a job they didn't apply for. That's what happens the moment they're like, okay, you're not reporting to them, you're doing this now. That's not just a simple like, oh, I'll just do that now. That's literally like, sometimes 70% of the reason someone is at a job is because of the boss they work for, the direct supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And often that's why they leave jobs. So just know that when you do that, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm just saying there are ways to do it that should take into account all of module one. Maybe not all the content of module one, but the emotional process of module one is really critical for you to understand. And I'm happy to help you tactically design things. I just want you to have that awareness. And then we can talk about, like, well, what conversation should you have in what order and what should be revealed at that moment. And, you know, the way that you're doing this is staging the ascent is you're giving people permission to resist you, which that doesn't happen in organizations. And so when you say the purpose of this next conversation, you don't have to care about what I'm presenting. You don't even have to agree with what I'm presenting. I only want you to understand what I'm presenting. I don't want us to leave this room without you understanding the perspective I bring. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to care and you don't have to agree. And I'm not going to ask you to decide anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have however many conversations you need to have. And maybe it's only one. Maybe it's just one meeting. Sometimes it's three meetings before people really understand what it is you're after.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're doing that, you're also getting feedback. You're figuring out where is the resistance, and you're getting curious about why is there resistance there? What am I playing with that I don't realize I'm playing with? And they don't even know why they're upset and resistant, right? But your job is to become a discerner of that emotional system and to go, ah, that person's like best friends and they have barbecues all the time. And I basically just said, you can't work with them anymore. You're going to work with them. Now I see what I've just done. And then you can start to think through, how do I have that series of conversations? Mm-hmm. And then you get to the next one where you go, okay, we've had a chance for you not to care. We've had a chance for you to disagree. We've had a chance for you to try to understand. We're now having a conversation where I'm asking you to enroll in this with me. I'm asking you to truly make a decision to buy into this, to hold hands and go forward. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for that? This is the stuff that most leaders don't realize. Even though you're formally empowered to tell people to go left and everybody should go left, it just isn't the way humans are designed. They just don't go left when you tell them to go left. So that's how you get them to a place. And the way you get them to a place is you give them a feeling of agency. You give them a feeling of sovereignty. And at some point after you've given enough of that, then you jerk the leash if you have to. You go, we're done with the conversations. We've had enough. We're all going left. And you will have earned the right to go left. I'm going to go, okay. He's at least heard me out a lot and I've complained a lot and I just need to accept it and move on. You'll get much faster buy-in. It'll feel slower at first, but what happens when you move really fast on a decision, you end up with 2 years of complaining versus if you take 3 months to have these conversations, you only get 3 months of complaining. So you've taken what is a 2 year headache and you compressed it into a 6 month headache.
Yeah. What I'm taking away from this is I was probably, so it's interesting because it's clear from the way I'm treating it that it's important because I've been agonizing over it and like laboring, but then I was preparing to, I don't think I was preparing a process behind it that recognized for other people it's going to be important. And I think that may be a habit that I have, which ultimately slows everything down because I want to, you know, I'm not going to like roll over the pain. I'll recognize it. And then maybe you just get like these really calcified versions of it where like there's just resistance that never moves. So it'd be better if I just prepare. I'm like, this is a big change and I have to work this process. So that's really helpful. Yeah, I got to watch. Yeah.
And I think it's video 12 or maybe it's 13 of module one, which reviews the staging the ascent journey, which I think you definitely need to watch.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, just remind yourself.
Watch it all again. Yeah.
This is super common. Most leaders will spend 5 months, 3 months, 6 weeks developing a strategy. And they've thought through every last thing. And they're like, oh my gosh, yeah, we did it. We did all this hard work. Let's launch it. And they all think that launch is like when it's starting. And what I always tell them is that's called base camp. The moment you introduce the idea, that's base camp. You now have to climb Everest. And there are five camps along the way, and this is what it's going to look like. And if you don't do it strategically and intentionally, that Everest climb is much, much harder.
Hmm. Yeah, I gotta watch those. Staging the ascent is one of the things I saw that made me want to ping you and work with you. And I need to go back and review it, but I got to watch all the modules in order. But even
there are some other modules that I realize, or videos and other modules that I think could actually be useful too. I got to remember where those are. Yeah. But that one is really foundational. And again, the main thing is for you to be thinking about is like, it's okay to come at people with an 80% baked thing and let them bake it the remaining 20%.
Yeah.
And that's how you use the stage in the ascent process. So you don't get every bolt tightened down on purpose.
Yeah.
And you just come at it like, this is kind of where I am. This is where I'm headed. And they're going to be like, are you crazy? Why would you do that? It's going to cause this. And you're like, oh yeah, you're right. That will cause that. Okay. Let me rethink that. What do you guys think? And then you bake it all the way.
Okay.
And what that gets you is buy-in, which is worth a lot.
Yeah, that's definitely what I need because I need to move fast on this. Like once we all decide, I don't, yeah.
And just know that like changing physical space and org design, it has to be informed by, it is as big a thing as vision, values, mission, those kinds of things. And when you talk about structure, you've got to begin to, you've got to link that argument about changing structure around mission, purpose, vision, values, strategy, all the things. It has to fall out of that. You know, it's effectively vision, mission, values, strategy, structure. And And structure refers to literally resourcing, physical space, people organization, that's structure. And that's the sequence that it has to follow. So if you don't have alignment.
Vision, mission, group.
Yeah. So, and by the way, I use vision and mission interchangeably, and I often combine them depending on the organization, but effectively that big higher purpose vision, we'll call it, or the why. Right. Values, which is vision is here's why we exist and here's what we do. Values is here's how we work together. This is what we can expect of one another in this organization. Mm-hmm. Then it's strategy. And this is how we will achieve this thing that we talk about. And then here's the structure that supports that strategy. Mm-hmm. So just make sure you've got buy-in on those things before you'll have buy-in on structure.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll also inform the argument you're trying to make. So again, you and I'd have to spend more time with me understanding those earlier strata. Yes. and have to understand just how bought in people are to those things and understand whether you have rituals, tools, and processes in place that make those things live in the organization, or if they're more just like afterthought words on a wall that most people don't pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
All of that matters.
Short answer is a bit of both.
Yeah. And it'd be normal for it to be a bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to design or over design something for you. I'm trying to get a picture of like, where are you and what have you already done so that I'm not reinventing it?
Yeah, no, I mean, just quickly on that, for me, what you'll find is because I have a lot of people around me who care and we've tried to do things the right way, everything's there. I think all the tools, I have all the tools, I just don't use them.
Okay, that's fair.
Like all the structure and everything's there. We've got, great vision, mission statement. We've got values that people really care about. I mean, there's some that they are just like, I can point to one guy. It's like, he constantly harps on this thing. It's his thing. That's his value that he loves, And then I think there's sometimes a bit of a disconnect between values getting into strategy. We've got a strategy. We've got like a strategy we set at the board level. We know what we're doing. And I think maybe translating that into structure and making sure.
Yeah. You're just asking the question, does this structure support our strategy?
Yeah.
And right now there are things that aren't working. And that's the way into the conversation is you go, we're all aligned. A strategy is merely an agreement. That's all it is. Like we have an agreement. And the agreement is this matters in this way. Now we need to figure out what structure meaningfully empowers that strategy. Mm-hmm. I believe the current structure misses these elements. It's not supporting this part of the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get effectively the enrollment, is because you're referencing prior agreements. So it's just like, this is strategy is an agreement. We made this agreement. This is what it is. Everybody on board. Yep. 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 Good. Now let's talk about structure. I think that here are the gaps. This is why. And if you're creating new structures that have nothing to do with the strategy, it's okay. You just want to make sure it's clear. Like, hey, this is something that is outside the scope of the agreement we've made, but I think is really important for us. And in fact, I think it reflects and expresses our values more than our strategy. Fine. That's a valid thing to do too. Honestly, physical space is one of the most powerful ways to reflect and express values. And those organizations that have the luxury to be able to create physical space, you can dynamically transform organizations with physical space.
True.
Especially if you think consciously about what are the values that we care about. So really go through all of module one, if you can. It's 13 videos. They're 5-10 minute videos. There's not a lot.
Yeah.
And just see what it sparks in you. And then we'll come back and revisit it.
Cool.
But I think this is a major part of what I can support you in.
Very cool. Well, that's great. You just magnified the importance of my top items. So
right. But what it should feel like is that it while it's more important, you don't have to figure it all out.
Right. Yeah. No, I definitely have that sense. Like I wrote down a handful of things you said that I'm going to be using, and I think this is going to help me. Cause I think a lot of these things are intuitive. It's like you can fumble your way through them, but having a framework for it, for one thing, is going to help keep me on a schedule. Instead of having to sit and kind of think about it and feel like what feels like the right next step, I can just work the process. So that'll be really useful.
And I've literally had, I've had meetings where I've done organization-wide meetings for major change management where I'll just say, this is called the awareness meeting. I show them the stage in the ascent. And I say, we're about to take a journey together. We're going to ask you to try to get to camp three. You don't have to get to camp five. That's gravy. Camp, you know, four and five are gravy. We don't need you to get there, but we are going to all try to get to this point in the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. Today, we're just at base camp. I'm just introducing it. And next week, we're going to try to be at understanding. And then you come in and you have a meeting. You're like, okay, we did the first one. Now we're going to be at understanding. Here's the goal of understanding. You don't have to care. You don't have to think about it. You just have to understand it. Ask all the questions you need to ask. Push back. This is a time to challenge. Enjoy it, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, I'm going to get you to the camp three. We're not there yet. And then you come back to it again. And it's been very effective because people are like, okay, that's where we're going. You're doing this because you care about and value my emotional experience. And I'm going to join you. And I was able to do a major, complete, total overhaul of an organization's values in a two-month period that normally takes about a year for most organizations. And people were completely on board. And at the end of that year, we did a benchmark employee engagement survey. We went from lagging the highest performing companies in the world to outperforming the highest performing companies in the world.
That's awesome.
So this stuff is very real, very powerful. A lot of that is in module one.
Okay. I have a maybe overly specific tactical question. It gets to my third. So my first most important thing is our roadmap. And then I've got the expo stuff going on. And then I've got an all hands tomorrow. I hate all hands. It's like, I'm not a big speech person unless there's an emergency when I'm great. Most of the time it's like some sort of care and feeding thing that I feel like I'm not totally synced up with everyone on. And they're expecting me to be like amazingly, I don't know, articulate. I had a question in my mind, and I think you've answered it about, so we've got this thing at the end of the month. We've been focusing on it. I'm still going to hit that. That's like my top one and two points. I think my third point is probably going to be starting to set the groundwork for this or awareness, but I wasn't sure whether to, because so many things have to happen in the background. Like actually I could go either way. The argument for not doing it is even among the leadership team, there are people who are like, I want to see this plan. I haven't seen it yet. You know, what are we going to do? We got to start working on this. They're ready to start giving input without having seen anything. At the same time, we know we need to get out of our space. This plan's going to start being executed, you know, in 6 weeks.
The great thing about this process is awareness is the easiest one to do. And you can simply say to people, hey, I feel like there's probably been conversations about this, but I haven't stated it to everybody. Here's something I'm working on. My senior team is dying to get access to it. I owe that to them. I'm looking forward to sharing it with the rest of you. We're going to be rethinking the way we do all this stuff. I don't want you to be worried about it. I don't want you to have to care about it. I don't even want you to need to understand it. I just want you to be aware that I'm working on something and some changes are coming, and I'm going to keep you guys apprised of it. And like I said, I owe my senior team that information first. That way, what you've done is you signal to the whole company, the senior team doesn't yet know. And I don't want to belabor this because I think I'm taking too long here, but I just want to say this. The thing that happens when you don't stage the ascent properly is if you try to take the whole company through it at the same level all the way through, you will create collusion against you on accident. And here's a way that works. I'm a manager. I have an employee. You announce a new initiative to both of us at the same time. The employee comes to me and goes, what's he talking about? And I go, I don't know. The moment I say, I don't know, I have colluded against you. I didn't mean to, but I literally didn't have any information. So I don't know. Now the employee goes, well, shit, I don't think he knows what he's doing. My manager is in the dark, just like I'm in the dark. That's not good. Mm-hmm. So that's why one of the ways that you stage the ascent is you also cascade it through the hierarchy. So as long as your senior team is already aware, you can now make the rest of the organization aware. You shouldn't make them both aware at the same time. You can make the senior team aware, then you make everybody else aware. Then you get the senior team to understanding, then you try to get everybody else to understand it. Because the first person they're going to go to after it's announced is their manager. And they're going to go, what the heck is he doing? Like, well, I knew about it, but I don't understand why he's doing it. Yeah, me neither. What? That's death. That's organizational depth. You want that manager going, here's why, here's what the important, here's, we've already had three meetings about it. I already understand it. This is what he's thinking. Don't worry about it. We're going to do this in a week. It'll be that, you know, that's when you have like, okay, they got their hand on the wheel. They're cascading the information. People understand what's going on.
Cool. That helps a lot. That tells me exactly what I need to do.
Yeah. And I just literally created a spreadsheet where it was like, by this date, I want this group of people at this camp. And then by this date, I need this group of people at this camp. And I just organized it and I set up meetings according to the dates. It was like, okay, now I got to have my awareness meeting. Now I'm going to have my understanding meeting. Now I'm going to have my enrollment meeting. And then you will find it's like butter. Every time I've done it, it's just effortless.
I love butter.
Who doesn't like butter, right?
I was just going to say that. If it's like butter, I'm all in.
Or I could say it's like bacon. You know, bacon is also
even better.
Exactly.
You can go chocolate. You know?
Yeah. It's like chocolate dipped bacon. It's just really that good.
Love it.
Good. Jeff, other things you want to check in? We got another 10 minutes or so. I want to be available. I'm not sure.
Again, all real good conversations. Just thinking that, you know, this whole staging the ascent thing, it's got a lot of value with me, with my group. I have a natural tendency to do it anyway. You know, I don't even realize I'm doing it, but I always want somebody to understand the why and the importance of what we're working on, what the mission is, what we're trying to accomplish, so they can kind of fit it all into their headspace and, you know, get their head around it a little bit before we actually start tackling it. But could do a better job, be more, you know, I almost want to say systematic about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always in my plan to kind of keep staging the ascent with different changes that we're doing. But then I'm also thinking about leading up with the people that I report to.
Yes.
You know, staging the ascent with them. And
absolutely.
Coming up with a real strategic plan that I sit down and I map out, kind of, you know, here's all the business pieces that are going to need to change over the next 6 months. How do I start staging the ascent with these people? And what's the best strategy to communicate it, rather than getting caught flat-footed on a fly where they send me an email? And by the way, that's what ended up happening with that last different people. A gentleman named Martin, I don't know what his position is. I know he's Max's right-hand man. So right-hand to CEO, whatever that position title is, I don't know. He's not the CFO.
Yellow.
He's not the COO. I don't know. Yeah, but he's got a C. And he is part of the senior leadership team. So he sent out an email, you know, that was instructing the IT people and all the other people, and other people in my group were caught on it, saying that some of the software that we were looking for, let's not be hung up on the software, the actual software itself. Let's look for the function of the function of it. And I'm sure we can find other software that's equally as good that will integrate with a package that he already has his eyeballs on. And I'm kind of steering us in a different direction. And these two packages that I'm trying to plug in, there's nothing like them. They're relatively new and there's really no second option that's really viable that provides the level of, you know, capability that these do. So I was taken flat-footed and other people brought up that same email to me during the day. So what did I do? I just dove in, you know.
I'm not even saying you did anything wrong. I'm just saying this is just about effectiveness more than anything.
No, what I was trying to say, though, is if I was being more strategic and kind of get, I'm always trying to get ahead of this stuff. That's my big thing, trying to get ahead of it. So where can I be an influence so that I'm pulling people towards me rather than reacting all the time?
I get it.
Yeah,
I totally get it. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, just all of what you were mentioning can be used, staging the ascent, and trying to learn to be more effective about it. So not long-winded emails that are reactionary, but yet some cadence of regular interaction with Martin. If I wanted to have a meeting with Martin or Max, I can do it anytime I want.
Yeah, if that's the case, if you have easy access to them, then I think you want to begin thinking about your curriculum. As a teacher, like, you don't have to tell them that they're under a curriculum or under training, but you would just say, hey, I'd like to have a meeting about this one aspect of our business, and I want to make sure that we're aligned in how we think about it. That is your way of saying, you guys don't know what you're doing. Let me show you how this business works and what the trade-offs are and what the benchmarks are and what the limitations are. And now we can make good decisions together. So you might just spend a few minutes thinking about where are the gaps in their knowledge that are material to the decisions they're being asked to make. Right. And how can you close the gap in their knowledge so that they can be making more informed decisions? And that is a proactive way to do it. Yeah. And it's not quite the same as staging the ascent, because you don't need nearly the amount of time, because it's not the same complexity. It's also a different power dynamic, right? So actually the managing up that we've already talked quite a lot about, that module in particular, that really applies much more to that managing up. And you've done that really expertly. You've done that really well. But I love the idea that you're coming up with, like, maybe I just need to be more proactive about what are the gaps that I can help close for them. Mm-hmm. And just write, you know, if you got five things set up, just know you're going to set up five meetings over 5 weeks and talk about various things. You don't even have to tell them that you're going to set up five meetings.
Right. And then what about, like, just one other question on that. I know that Martin likes to march to a very systematic, like, it's almost too systematic. You know, they will have a meeting after meeting after meeting trying to move forward on the software. I probably already attended, and I'm not kidding, probably 15 meetings, you know, trying to move forward on this software. And most of the time I can't even keep up. I just zone out because I already know that it's almost painful for me to try to jump in and repeat the same thing I repeated 2 weeks ago. You guys remember we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. So, and I don't know how serious they are, but that's their cadence. They want to really, like, make sure that 8 people are involved strategically looking at this software from, you know, 10, 12 different angles. And it's not that complex. Like, it really isn't. We could move forward with this and make leaps and bounds improvement in our operations if we could just pull the trigger and make sure that we're not leaving the rest of the organization with any gaps, you know, with other needs that the organization may have to interact with HVAC. And that was my last email to him, is that, you know, we could get this out rolled out pretty quick if we could just figure out where the gaps are that the organization might need from us, that you don't understand how Service Titan will work with it, you know? And so, and I don't understand where all the gaps are.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line for you, this is actually very similar to what Derek's trying to deal with, which is, you know, people underestimate how much change comes with things like software. Like, there's a huge learning curve. There's a, I don't want this. I didn't ask for this. I don't know what the point of this is. Like, those things happen in organizations. And so it sounds like, actually, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it sounds like what they're doing is actually helpful. Like, getting more people to talk about it, that's generating awareness. Having debates about it, even though you think it's inefficient, that's getting to understanding. And eventually it gets to enrollment, and that enrollment happens faster when you take a little extra time to respect the emotional process. Now, again, I don't know the software. I don't know how integrated it is. I don't know whatever, but I'm telling you that even if you just had an organization go from working with Excel to Google Sheets, that alone is a change that people are like, I don't like Google. I don't want to log in. I don't know how to find my documents. I don't, like, the things are different. I don't like that they're different, and I don't want to do that. And yeah, you get resistance, and you get people not buying in, and you get people not doing, even though for you, it's like, this is obvious and easy and everybody should do it. It's a way superior product. Why don't you want to be a part of a way superior product? And it's because of emotion. It's just, I don't feel like it. I don't like change. I don't want to learn. I'm learning enough in my life. I don't want to learn about that. And so just know that that's what you're actually potentially.
All those people that are around this that are in IT support, yeah, I'm sure they're really concerned how they're going to get their hooks into this proprietary package to drag information out of it, how it might need to integrate with, you know, other things. So yeah, maybe this is all, you know, like you said, is good stuff for them. It's hard for me. It's slam dunk.
Yeah, I know it is. And this is the thing about leading in complex systems, is things that are a slam dunk just take time, and people have to deliberate. And it is in your interest to an extent to allow that.
Yeah.
Because that is what change management is about. Change does not have to be painful. I've led change in multiple contexts with very little pain. And I've watched leaders just run a tank right through their office and have no idea what wake they left and the damage. And it's very common. Most people don't understand what I'm describing. And most people feel it's counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So
you got to slow down in order to speed up.
Okay. So the only thing I would add to that, I think that after everything that we're going through, Martin still is driving towards this other package that will integrate easier with some other package they have. They have another software package that Salesforce, and the package he's looking at is got an easier integration point with Salesforce, but it really has a terrible UI. It's not designed for our industry. So even after all these meetings and trying to pull everybody together and everybody's talking, I do have people that are advocating in the IT department for ServiceTitan because of all the work that I put in trying to educate people. But Martin, I notice, is not, and that's what his email sent to me yesterday, was that he's not bought in yet.
Yeah, and I think that's an easy conversation with Martin where you, again, you use the techniques of managing up, mm-hmm. right? And the technique of managing up is you come with neutral perspective and trade-offs and consequences. That's it. And you remove your own agenda from it. So even though you believe this and you think very strongly about it, he knows that. You just come in and say, Martin, happy to execute on anything that you need me to execute on. Let me just walk you through some trade-offs as I see them so that we're all open our eyes when we make the decision we need to make. If you go with Salesforce, it sounds like you're prioritizing integration with this thing. That sounds like a valid thing. What you lose, we see all these things that we lose because it's not industry specific. If you go with this, you're going to get huge efficiencies on this end and faster buy-in with this group, but we're going to have to spend more time figuring out that integration. We're going to have to do workarounds and solve for that. It seems to me those are the two choices you're faced with. Which one matters more to you? I'll execute which one matters more.
Right.
And that neutrality and that kind of, I'm going to do whatever you want, allows him the freedom to make a better choice because he's no longer trying to argue with you and resist you because he's going to put on you things like he's just lazy. He just doesn't get it. He's not, you know, I don't know that he's saying that, but that's normal for leaders to feel about their team. They're like, why is he resisting? There's some other hidden motivation for why he's resisting and I don't trust it. And the way you get trust is by going, I'm good either way. I'm happy. I'll sleep great either way tonight. I just need to know that you're clear on what the real trade-offs are. And then let's have an honest conversation about that. And then I'm going to go to work. Tell me which way you want to go and I'm going to make it happen. That eases leaders' anxiety to be able to go, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I should really take that seriously. And he does make a good point about that. And he seems fine either way. So I guess it is my decision. So when you bring a leader, I'm good either way and I can make it happen. What you've effectively said to them is it's your decision. You've empowered them completely to make a decision. And that weirdly, paradoxically, makes them not want to override you. When you grant people power, they're less likely to exercise it. When you try to steal power, they are more likely to exercise it.
All right. Well, I have to really temper my enthusiasm for my slam dunk. It's just so I'm going to have
to. Yeah, but you don't have to hide. You don't have to hide that you have an opinion and a preference. You should be saying, from my perspective, from where I stand, this is my recommendation. I think this is a better way to go. I am totally content to execute either that you desire. That is a powerful thing. And again, the way you get there is for you. You go, I'm willing to leave if I have to. You don't tell him that, but you're like, if it's a violation of your values, you just remove yourself from the equation and go, this is just an impersonal business decision that you're facing. I'm happy to help facilitate that decision for you. And then I'll figure out what I'm going to do on my end after, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
You'll get more credibility. You'll get more of a hearing. You'll get invited to more important meetings, all that stuff.
Fair enough.
Good. Okay. I think we're at the end here. Derek, anything else? Closing comments before we.
Just about this Jeff's software thing. I was going to just, as I listen to you, I don't know all the details, but I don't think you should temper your enthusiasm. The one thing I was thinking was like, you share ultimately at some level, you share the same goal. Like it may be that you're saying there's this functionality that will let us provide a solution or execute faster and our customers are going to love it. And therefore we'll sell more. It sounds like he's saying, oh, I want integration with Salesforce so that I can presumably sell more. Like at some level, these things converge and maybe you just have a perspective that he doesn't have. It's like, you know, it takes more than an integration to sell more. It takes capabilities that the industry doesn't have.
And, exactly.
And then when you come with enthusiasm, it's like you, when you see this, you'll understand we can sell more.
I think, right.
And I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not suggesting you need to pretend you don't care.
Right.
I'm saying come in with your full perspective and the full weight of what you think. And at the same time, be divested of that outcome, that decision, so that he's free to kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he might be like, yeah, I understand. But like, I'd rather you take the pain. It's just, exactly. In my, it's better to have the sales support. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep. Good. Gentlemen, always a pleasure.
All right.
Have fun talking next week. All right. Bye.